G'day and welcome to Macca's Podcast. I love the scope of our program, anything and everything. If you want to get in touch with Australia, this is the place to do it. Settle back and join the Australian phone box. See you on the road.
Get on with it, Macca.
G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, morning, Macca. Just doing the suitcases, packing them with Macca on Sunday morning.
Where are you off to?
Oh, we go to Japan, we go to China, bit of work, bit of pleasure.
Bit of pleasure. Like that's Japan to be skiing now, would it?
Yeah, I mean, my brother's got a place there. I think it's actually worked out cheaper to get a joint over there and own it as opposed to a week in Australia taking the family skiing.
Really? Yeah. Really? And what are you doing in China?
Oh, I'll be doing all the usual craft masterclass spare parts specialist, looking at the factories that produce all the electric mobility bits and pieces.
Oh, you into that, are you? Do you manufacture, do you?
Yeah, that's my line of work.
Yeah, there you go. Well, so it's cheaper to buy a place in Japan than to go skiing for a week here in Australia.
That can't be right. Over there.
Really?
Yeah, cheap as.
All right. Well, enjoy yourself, mate. When are you leaving?
I'll be off next week. I might file a report in next fortnight.
All right. Good on you, Brendan.
Thanks,
Macca. Safe travels.
Yep.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca. Hello.
Macca, hello.
G'day.
G'day, yeah, Marcus from Tarragindi in Brisbane, just near the wonderful Tui Forest. And, talking about the wineries, just love those family-run wineries, like the gentleman in Tasmania. They're really the highlight of touring around Australia.
You do a bit of that?
Enjoy them. Pardon?
You do a bit of that?
I do a lot of that, yes. Get round to all of the states. And, there's just so many in regional South Australia and regional Victoria, in New South Wales, even in, southern Queensland. There's some great wineries. And I often find that the people have a lot of great stories to tell, and one good story leads to another, and there's often somewhere else to go from a suggestion at the winery, and often the wines are superb, really undiscovered gems that you'll never find in a bottle shop, you'll never find it in those big chain stores. I've got a whole collection of them, and I tell you, I think I'll be cracking one up today, because there's a big sausage sizzle on at the Bunnings Oxley for the Cavalier Club. So, we'll be there today. And, I think we'll need some good Australian wine afterwards, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the beauty. It's like anything. When you go searching for something that you're looking, you like, and you know it's around somewhere, but you've just got to look and go through lots of files and things like that. And I suspect it's the same with trying a winery here. It's not too bad, but there's another one up the road, and yes.
Look, the ones that are open by appointment are often the best to go. It really pays to phone up and have a chat and see if the owner or the partner of the owner is available, or often the children, and to go in and see them. And quite often you won't be disappointed. You'll be blown away with what you discover.
What do you do, Marcus, for a gig?
Oh, me, I'm a bit of a writer. I love, writing content and, just generally, telling people stories and, just enjoy getting about and listening to people's story when I'm, off the clock, so to speak.
Yeah.
That's why I love listening to your show. There's so many great Australian stories on it.
Yes, we talk to people all over the place, which is really nice, and they're fresh and they're genuine too. I mean, this is what a bloke said to me yesterday. He said, "Totally dumb. You talk to people out in the real Australia. It doesn't matter where you live, I suppose, but there's a great Australian spirit, I reckon, which should be conserved. This country's been built for many, many years with all sorts of people. And, I think about the post office and I think, Australia Post started, as the postmaster generals and little people years and years and years ago started it all off and you build on the step, you know, the footsteps, the stepping stones of people who've gone before. But I think sometimes people forget that, and that people have
I agree.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's a big problem. I mean, Australia Post is a fantastic institution. Where would we be without our local post office or our licensed post office? And often there's a local there working really hard to bring you all our sort of fantastic, useful, essential services. And I was thinking about that this week with ABC Perth going to FM and thought, you know, in the olden days when they used to open ABC stations, would always be the Postmaster General that you read about in the history. So I hope they've got someone equally historic that will stand the test of time to, open that conversion to FM coming up this week.
I think is it tomorrow?
It's tomorrow, Monday.
Yeah, yes. That's right, yeah.
7:20 a.m.
Yep, and it's a big change too. But anyway, we'll hope people will tune along. We'll keep telling them today that they've got to change tomorrow. But
all your music will sound fantastic in FM stereo, and it probably is this morning as there is still running the test simulcast. So yeah, you'll sound great, and all the other capital cities don't want to hear you on FM as well if they're not listening on DAB.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all right. Good on you, Marcus. Good luck with your riding, and I'll take that tip about you got to have the time, but haven't you, to wander around to look for wineries and things? You got to have the time, and that's the same with everything in life. You need the time. We're all time poor now, more than any time I think certainly in my lifetime. Seems to be rushing everywhere. I've got a song I'll play it in a minute called Rushing to Nowhere. But, I think we are.
I agree. Yeah, look, everything that's worth it takes time, and it's worth investing in Australia and spending your time on making it a better place.
Good on you, Marcus.
See you.
Bye.
Hello.
Oh, it's John Howie. Good morning, John Howie.
Good morning, Macca. How are you going?
Yeah, good.
I've got a wine story for you, Macca.
Yeah.
About 15 years ago, I had one of my tour groups over in New Zealand, top of the North Island, the Marlborough region.
Mm.
Anyway, I knew that they were famous for a particular wine there, and the tour group, we went out to an Italian restaurant, and I said to the young waiter, give me a glass of that wine that's famous, that this region's famous for. So he came back with a glass of Wither Hills Sauvignon Blanc. And anyway, when I tasted it, I thought that's the best wine I've ever tasted. I thought it was amazing. And I fell in love with Sauvignon Blanc, especially the Marlborough stuff. It's just got an incredible taste all of its own, and I think you either love it or you don't, Macca. But anyway, about 5 years ago, the Howie brothers were doing a gig down in northern Tasmania, and at the end of the gig I thought I'll go over to the bar and get a glass of Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. So anyway, I go over to the bar, and there's this beautiful young blonde lady behind the bar, and I said, can I have a glass of Sauvignon Blanc? And she said, oh, unfortunately we've run out. And I said, she said, why don't you try a glass of our local Tamar Valley Sauvignon Blanc? And I said, is it any good? And she said, it's fantastic. So anyway, she got me a glass of that, and I'll tell you what, it was just like the Marlborough from New Zealand. It was fantastic.
I think you're an alcoholic. That's what I think.
I probably do sound a bit like that. But anyway, I had a look on a map, Macca, and the Marlborough region at the top of the South Island of New Zealand and the top of Tasmania, they're on exactly the same latitude.
Well, there you go.
A little bit of...
You're saved. Yeah. You're saved. Now, if you can't get that one, you can get that one, if you know what I mean.
Oh, well, I just suggest to everybody that you try a glass of Tamar Valley Sauvignon Blanc from Tasmania. It's fantastic.
All right, mate. And where are you this morning?
I'm in Melbourne, yep. Overcast, Macca.
Have you got humidity down there? Is it humid?
Not really. No, we just had a tiny spit of rain, but not much at all. But it's very overcast, and we are supposed to get a tiny little bit of rain. 2 millimetres, I think, Macca. So it's very overcast, but we're only going to get a little bit of rain.
Good on you, John.
Yeah, good on you, Macca.
Thanks, mate.
See ya.
Bye.
Ta-da.
Paul's in Killarney. Morning, Paul.
Yes, good morning, Macca. I'd just like to tell you that when Cyclone Mitchell came through, we had between 55 and 80 mils of rain. So I'm out here spraying all the pasture at the moment, all the crops.
And this for weeds, is it, Paul?
So the volunteer wheat that's come up from that was unharvested, yeah.
And Paul, tell me this. Tell people where Killarney is in WA.
Killarney is about 2.5 hours drive northeast of Perth.
Uh huh. And you've got a place. You got a place there, or are you a sprayer?
I've been working on a farm here for the last 14 years, so it's been going very good.
That's the way. That's the way. So you had, when did Cyclone Mitchell come through? A couple of months ago. Was it a month ago?
I think it was about 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So that was very good. So there'll be a lot of people out here doing what I'm doing now.
And preparing for ploughing.
Seeding in April.
Yeah, right.
For the winter crop. Just quickly, we've got an event coming up in Killarney. It's called Wheatstock, Another One Bites the Dust. I rang you in about 2018 when we had another one, Who Stopped the Rain, the same event. And the bands that we've got playing there is Proud Mary, Bohemian Rhapsody, Tigran Brothers Kinnett, Josie and the Romanas, and Drummer and Drummer.
And when's that on?
That's on the next Saturday the 28th of February.
In Killarney?
In Killarney, yeah.
All right, that'll be a big time.
I think there's about 1,000 people at the moment that are coming, and if people are interested in looking at the event, they can look on a Facebook page called Wheatstock Killarney Concert.
Wheatstock Killarney Concert. All right. Good on you, mate. Have a good time. Nice to talk to you this morning. What's it like have you had a hot summer over there?
It's been very warm. So we've got a nice cool day today. It's only supposed to get to 32, but next week it's going to be mid to high 30s.
All right, mate. Good on you.
No worries. Thanks,
Macca. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Morning, Macca. It's Glenn. How are you going?
Yeah, good, Glenn.
Good. Well, yeah, you mate, I've just come from the Western Australian border through to Port Augusta, and it's been raining all night.
Wow.
In some places, very hard. I just woke up in the parking bay out there in a half out of Nutbush, if you remember where that is. On the Iron Mob Road.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely teeming down when I woke up.
Well, somebody said to me, they wrote to me, I think late last year, and said, when lake air fills, or not fills, but gets a lot of water in it, it just means that for some places anyway, there's increased rainfall around the place. And there has been, but of course there's other places that are still dry. But there's a lot of humidity around too, Glenn. I don't know, what's it like where you...
It's very humid, yeah.
How do you sleep? You sleep in your truck?
Yeah. I just pulled up about an hour and a half.
So when you sleep in your truck, do you have the air conditioning on or no? You just, no.
I have what they call an ice pack, which is like an air conditioner, but outside, it starts up from inside the truck and then runs automatically.
Oh, I see.
And that pumps cold air into the truck. So you don't actually have to have the truck running. You turn the ice pack on.
I see.
You got to sleep under the diesel when it's on.
Yeah, I'll say. Turn that. Somebody's listening to you, are they? You're on the another one of the truckies. Yeah.
I'm just going through the roadworks here at Wilmington Channel.
I see. And Glenn, how long have you been driving?
45 years. I've got 5 weeks to go, and I can retire.
Well, don't retire. When I speak to Ron Finnemore, he says, you know, we need truck drivers. We need good truck drivers. It's hard to get anybody, and truck drivers.
I used to work for him.
Did you? And most of the freight around Australia has moved on trucks, as you know, Glennie.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I get in to Adelaide in another 2.5 hours. This will get unhooked. I didn't bring a different set of trailers today.
Uh-huh.
And this truck will be in Sydney in the morning.
Well, it's interesting. I love it. I love it. The fact that things are going all across Australia. You know, I talked to truckies and I said, "What are you going?" He says, "Caravans over, caravans back. Coca-Cola's to Brisbane. Coca-Cola back. Light bulbs over, light bulbs back."
It's like that parcel freight.
Yeah, parcel freight for what? For Australia Post, is it? Or
no, different companies. Major big companies that do that sort of thing. Yep. I don't know what's in the trailers today. They're all sealed up.
And how's things look across the paddock?
Very green. Very green. It's been raining over there for months.
Yeah.
Just about. It was when I was at Mundrabilla, I woke up there about 6 o'clock last night, and it was raining. It was just spitting when I woke up there. And from Perth through to there, it'd been just spitting nearly the whole way. It was trying to rain.
It's an interesting place, isn't it, crossing that, especially when it's been when it's green. I remember one morning, I don't know, it must have been 25 years ago, and there was floods across there, and a bloke rang up and he said, "Can you tell, because we haven't got any contact," and he said, tell me wife that we're all the trucks, there was trucks on both sides of the flood across the, I don't know where it was, somewhere across the paddock.
In Caledonia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, do you know, were you there, were you?
Yeah, well, I was driving car carrier road trains for Mr. Finneymore.
Yeah.
Going across there at night, they had a grader parked out there. And he was towing you from one end through the roadworks.
That's right.
To the other end. All night the grader was there, just towing trucks through the roadworks.
Oh, yeah. That's the time.
That would have been about 97, 98, I reckon. Somewhere there.
And you reckon there's been a lot of heavy rain out there?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This, where did I see the water again? Down around between Coolgardie and Southern Cross, along the edges there, there were big puddles of water. I go back and forth every week.
All right, Glenn. Well, thanks for the report, mate. Nice to talk to you.
No worries, mate. Yeah.
And if I don't
back,
talk to you...
The rain's backed off a bit now.
Yeah.
But it's still spitting here. I don't know what I'm on now. 30-odd k's out of Port Augusta.
Good on you, mate.
Still spitting. All right, mate. Have a good one.
Thanks, Glenn.
Bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Hey there, Macca.
G'day.
You got me or not?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, yeah. It's Bazza from Macclesfield, Macca.
From Macclesfield, eh? There you go. Baz, what are you up to, mate?
We're getting ready to blow some weathers up to taking a trip up to Albury-Wodonga area.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting ready to load them, and I was telling a mate yesterday, got to get those sheep up there, and he said, you're taking your co-pilot up with you. And I said, yeah, of course, mate. And he goes with me everywhere I go to, you know.
And who's your co-pilot?
That's Ozzy, the little kelpie I got.
And how many sheep are you taking?
Only a small load, about 30.
Up to Albury?
Yeah, well, just out of Albury. An old customer of mine rings me about every 6 or 7 months and orders some sheep, so go and transport them up to George there.
And you'd be nowhere without your sidekick, mate. Is that what you're saying?
I tell you what, he's a bloody corker, mate. Mm. He is a corker. Smart as they come.
Yeah, he's, as Henry Lawson said in his poem, my dog's clever... And he can do everything but talk, and he wouldn't even if he could. That's how clever he was.
Well, I reckon that puts Ozzy right in the book, mate. He's exactly the same.
So it's you in the truck with Ozzy the Kelpie. Just one Kelpie?
I've got a Australian cattle dog, old Banjo. He's a bit like myself. He's a bit burnt out and worn out, but he's still going. And he's a really excellent worker. Really.
And the dogs love it, don't they? I mean, they live for when the boss gets up in the truck and the ute or whatever. They just live for it, you know. The rest of life says, all right, hanging around. And then when the movement at the station, wow. You can just, their eyes light up. Doesn't matter how old they are. Their eyes light up and they think, God, we're off. We're doing something. Yes, I'll do. Yeah, what do you want me to do? They're just, They're wonderful company, aren't they, Baz?
Oh, you can't beat them. Look, even young Aussie, 3 months old, one day it was pouring bloody rain and pissing down, we're windy as buggery, and he was restless. So I got him inside and I put him on the lead and took him around the lounge suite and took him around the couch. Go around one, go around two, go around three, jump the couch like jumping up on the sheep's back. And he does that every morning. As soon as he gets off the bed, right, he just does it automatically.
You're at Macclesfield, Baz. You've got a little place there, have you?
Yeah, I'm on just 40 acres.
And you dry there?
Mate, it's dry as can be.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? And some getting inundated, you know, just wherever you are. But that was ever the same in Australia, isn't it? You know, a land of droughts and flooding rains, and that's what we've got. This summer's been funny. We've had, well, not funny, it's just been usual, hasn't it, really? You get the drought and you get the rain and floods and bushfires, the whole deal, Baz. Good luck with your trip up there to Albury, mate, and give Oz and Banjo a pat for me.
Yeah, can you do me a favour?
What's that?
That song with Co-Pilot and Me.
Yeah. Oh, mate, yeah.
Tail end of it. Would you mind playing it for us, mate?
All right, I'll find it here. While I'm just talking to you now, I'll just get it out. Yeah, all right. Yep, okay. Good on you, Baz.
Thanks for a good show, mate. I love listening to it every Sunday morning.
Good on you. See ya.
All the best, mate.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, g'day, Macca. It's Jared Gray here. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Jared.
Mate, I must admit I was still in bed and I was listening to the program just a little bit earlier and I heard the caller ring in about how wet it was across the Nullarbor, and I nearly rang you last Sunday. Well, my family and I were in Tokyo and I was listening on the ABC Listen app.
Yeah.
And I was going to ring because I heard Jimmy Whipcracker give you a tingle, and I used to play a bit of footy with Jimmy back in the day out at the Blighty Football Club, and for a whole host of reasons, that nearly made me ring, and I realised I was listening to the Perth program because of time difference, yeah. And it would have been after 10. Anyhow, while we're on our holidays, I thought I'll take a book with me. I was reading this amazing book called Air, The Forgotten Explorer.
Oh, Edward John Eyre. Yeah, I think I've got that book. Yeah.
Oh, what? Every Aussie needs to read that story about just human persistence and the his trip across the Nullarbor and how many days they went without water and, you know, shrinking the party and burying supplies just to be able to make it forward. And, he was amazing. That
and bloke. He bumped into, was it Baudin? Is that what saved his bacon?
Yes, the ship was that French ship, the Whaler, sitting in a harbour, Desperate Harbour or one of the little harbours there or something. Just happened to be there. I mean, how fluky was that? And the whole book was amazing. But anyhow, it was good. Sometimes on holidays you finally get to read. But we had sort of 3 weeks in Japan, the family and I, so hence being able to read the book. And I need to thank my father-in-law, actually, for putting me on to listening to you back in about 1993 one Sunday morning. The radio was up really loud and he used to make us listen to you. And I was only a youngster back then, hanging around with his daughter. But anyhow, now we've been married 30 years and I'm still listening to you. So
can't be all bad.
No, that was back when part of the trip when we were over, and people, anyone from over, we're Finley Jewelry people, but a lot of the old time locals over there might remember my old man. His name was Bluey Gray, and we grew licorice, the plant, for a Japanese company, and it's the root of the plant that we harvest. It had never been done in the world when Dad and Mum took it on, and we grew about 600 acres of it eventually, and. While we're over in Japan, I wanted to go down to Hiroshima, and my granddad was a prisoner of war in World War II, and I sort of always have had a bit of an eye on the history side of all of the world wars. And but Omonichi, which is this beautiful little port town, is where all the licorice used to get shipped back to.
And what? And
we went.
They were keen on it, were they? They were keen there in Japan for the licorice.
Yeah. Well, these guys have been. Extracting the chemical out of the licorice root since the 50s, this family, this is their third generation, and it's actually a It's actually a really amazing chemical that they get out of it. It's in all your cancer and medicines, your liver treatments, your skin moisturizers. Actually, the biggest use in the world, Macca, is tobacco flavorings. It's like 400 times sweeter than sugar. Licorice.
Never tasted like it when I was forced to eat a choo-choo bar at the pictures. There's no way in the world. They were sweet.
It's a bit different to the beautiful black Darolee licorice we get to eat these days. It's a very different taste. But my old man passed away 20 years ago. We've been living over here since about 99, and so we haven't had anything to do with them. But I sent them an email, and they said, come and see us. And it was great. It was a really interesting day with them. Mm.
Jared, nice to talk to you, mate. It's nice to go to Japan. It's the place that's being loved to death by tourists, apparently.
Oh, my God, there's so many Aussies over there, and it's not even peak time. So many Aussies skiing. But I can see why. The people were beautiful. The whole experience was amazing, Macca. Good food and good people and clean. Oh, my God, so clean. I remember the second morning we're walking through a train station, and here's a guy vacuuming the steps and polishing the handrails. And I'm like, geez, in Australia, that if someone was vacuuming the steps, they would have told us to get stuff for walking on his steps.
And we've got Clean Up Australia, I think, on either the first or the third coming up. And, I'm just amazed that every year they get tons and tons of crap that people pull out. But Japan seems to be very clean, like Singapore. And if you get a kick in the bum if you start throwing cigarette butts around in Singapore. So it's a state of mind, isn't it? It's the state of mind. And I think we need this country needs a pull through in terms of just we need to size things up and say, well, look, this is the country we live in. It's a lovely country, and it's up to everybody to pull a little bit of weight, just a little bit of weight, not too much, but just, look after the place. And if it's all looked after, it's all better.
Yeah, well, and that's how they do it. There's no bins anywhere. You take your rubbish with you. You know, that's how they do it. It's a state of mind. You're dead right. It's interesting.
Yeah, all right, Jared. Nice to talk to you, mate.
On your Macca. Thanks for taking the call.
It's a pleasure. G'day, this is Macca.
Hey, Macca. It's Judy calling from Hobart.
Hi, Jude. How's things in Hobart?
Yes, it's a beautiful sunny day. We're expecting some much-needed rain later today. But
I was going to ask that. You've been dry down there, have you?
Very dry.
Yeah, you get very dry. Yeah, Tassie gets like that. I mean, I've been doing this for a little while, and I can remember sometimes in the Midlands, dry. You'd think of the Apple Isle, as it used to be called, as a lovely green thing, but not always. Jude, what's not on your always. Mind?
So I'm just ringing this morning just to do a little bit of a spiel about the fact that today is the start of the National PanKind Put Your Foot Down for Pancreatic Cancer Walks.
What's it called? PanKind, or is it?
PanKind.
PanKind, right.
PanKind. Yeah, so every year across the year we have a series of walks, and they kick off in Hobart, and they go through every state in the nation. It's the 17th year this year. We've had 30,000 walkers across the 17 years, raised about $3.74 million. And, very important topic, especially for your listeners in the rural areas, because we know statistically people in rural and regional areas are less likely to be able to see a doctor, later diagnosis, less likelihood of survival, not a good cancer, 13% survival rate for, 13% 5-year survival rate, I should say.
Mm.
And we've got, every hour, two Australians are being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
What drew you to be involved in this, Jude?
So in 2021, I had a pancreatic cancer diagnosis, and luckily I'm still here to tell the story, but unfortunately a lot of other people aren't.
Yeah, I've heard that about pancreatic. So this is called PanKind, and PanKind. It's a walk, and it starts when?
So today's the kickoff, and it's in Hobart. We'll be registering from 8:30 this morning.
Whereabouts?
Lindisfarne, Simmons Park in Hobart, and the walk starts at 9:30. You can hop online and register, or you can register on the day.
And you said this is in all states?
This is, and then from there it kicks off across all states. So if you just go to the PanKind site or look for put your foot down, you'll find a site near you.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Good on you, Jude. Nice to talk
to you. No, thank you for the chance to have a chat about it. I mean, it's just unfortunate that, you know, with 75 Australians dying a week from pancreatic cancer and the third leading cancer death, we just still don't have the answers for early detection. We don't have a way to diagnose early, and sadly that leads to a higher incidence of death from pancreatic cancer.
Well, everyone can do a little bit by joining Pankind. Good on you, Jude.
Thanks for the chat.
It's a pleasure. Bye. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and one of the world's most sacred relationships, I reckon, involves Australians and their car. But, as usual, in the brave new world we have inherited from Apple and Elon, that partnership is under transformation. Or is it? I read conflicting reports about the uptake of electric cars, the cost of batteries, the fires, cost of insurance, etc., etc. To sort it, I've asked John Connolly, columnist with the Australian newspaper, on anything with four or two wheels, to give us an update. He's on the line. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Macca. How are you?
I'm good. Where are we with the electric vehicle? I see Ford's done a runner, if you like. paint me a picture.
Well, I think the starting point is to say that this isn't just a car story. It's about batteries, supply chains, scale, batteries, minerals, everything. So China now is building about two-thirds of the world's global EVs. But at the same time, it dominates all the supply chain. So it's able to make cars extremely cheaply. As a result, as you're seeing in Australia and every other country, people are buying Chinese EVs. Now, interestingly enough, despite all the talk, in the US and Australia, only about 8% of new vehicle sales are electric, pure electric. So the punters saying they prefer two things: one, all petrol, and secondly, hybrid, which is petrol and EV. But pure EVs, they're not so keen on.
And is that because of the cost, or the cost of batteries, or the fires? I had a bloke who wrote to me last week, and he said, "Look, I've got an electric vehicle, and I love it to death, and I've never paid for any electricity bills since I've had the electric vehicle." I know you've written from time to time, that's fine. Just don't park your car in the garage you've called where the elephant sleeps, in the garage, or just near the house because of the danger of fires.
Unless you want a brand new barbecue immediately in the carport, I wouldn't be putting my electric car there. And this is not, people always say, oh, you're talking about one or two cars. These are hundreds of thousands of cars being recalled, or you're being told to park them well away from your house, which is a good opportunity if you have a neighbour you hate. I'd be parking outside his or her house and just waiting for the action.
As for insurance, I've noticed that car insurance has gone up generally, but it's pretty expensive on electric vehicles, if I'm not wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. And look, another thing to think about is when you're talking about batteries, it's not like the battery in your petrol car that I think is about $250 from Supercheap or something like that. On some of these cars, it's around $30,000 to replace. So the battery can be worth more than the car. The price of entry might be relatively cheap, but the costs associated with it are very heavy. And the other thing to bear in mind, and you've got a lot of listeners who live in the real Australia, you don't want to leave your postcode, because range, despite what they claim, range is very, very small. And if you're running out of electricity, it's not like running out of petrol and you can stop in the nearest servo. A, you've got to find a servo that's got a charger. B, you've got to find a servo with a charger that's working. And then C, you've got to find a servo with a charger that's working, that there isn't a big queue outside. And even after that, you're going to have to spend half an hour or three quarters of an hour eating iced chocolates while you wait for the car to charge.
Why do I see recommendations that you only charge your battery to 70%? I mean, what's the deal with that?
So a couple of things. One is that the more you charge your battery, and any, this is true of any sort of electric battery in bikes and cars. The more you charge your battery, the more cycles, the greater it's going to wear down. But there's no advantage, in fact, a disadvantage, in having your battery charged to 100%. You're better off charging it to 70, 75, and you'll get about the same result. But I think the problem, Macca, is if you're not in a decent suburb in a capital city, you're not going to be able to charge it, and you're not going to find a place. I've driven quite a bit on the Birdsville track. I have to say there's not a lot of electric chargers on the Birdsville track.
No, or the Strzelecki.
some of the others, but they may come.
Just before we leave electric vehicles, you say that the Chinese are building it cheaper and better and they're selling more. Is that going to blow up the rest of the car industry around the world?
It's already doing it, Macca. So, I mean, can I just put in a plug for what I think is the great tragedy of Australia, which is we gave up car manufacturing because we said you can't subsidise it. Every country in the world that makes cars subsidise their car industry. But just moving along from that, so what you're seeing in Europe is the Euro manufacturers either moving back to petrol cars because they can't compete, or having to shut down factories and put people off work. The same has been happening in the United States, although Trump today was dealt a blow on his 100% tariff. But the same effect will happen. If you get those cars in there, you won't have a vehicle manufacturing industry, or at least American vehicle manufacturing industry. You might get China building some car plants, but there's a huge advantage, as we have in Australia, in all sorts of ways, in having a local car industry, and that will disappear.
John Connolly. John, did you go to Bathurst last week for the 12-hour race?
No, I tell you what I do now. I watch, I hate to say it, races on television, because you see all the action that takes place. You get replays and it's a lot cheaper. But I think, you know, my view of motor racing, as you probably know, Macca, is, you know, motor racing is not better than sex, but it lasts longer. And we saw that particularly at Bathurst. This race was just wonderful.
Yeah, except it's a big praying, wasn't there, on the bends there, and the poor old kangaroo. I mean, it seems to be a kangaroo clocked every time we're at race at Bathurst.
Well, the interesting part is the Americans are getting a lot more interested in coming to race at Bathurst, and that'll just confirm all their worst fears. All we need is big white shark as well, and kangaroo, big white, you know, a couple of bad snakes, and it's all there. Perfect television for the Americans.
Exactly. And of course, then there's the racing itself. Now, the other news in the world of from four wheels to two wheels, the other news, of course, is the MotoGP leaving Phillip Island, which seems to me an ideal racing circuit, but off to Adelaide. Tell us about that.
Well, Macca, Phillip Island is probably the best, and I'm not from Victoria, so I'm not biased, the best motorcycle racing circuit in the world. It's fantastic. And it's been the home for great Australian champions. So in the years we've had the MotoGP, Casey Stoner, our own Casey Stoner's won 6, Mick Doohan won 3, Wayne Gardner's won 2. So, you know, just great for the country. But the bottom line is the people that own Formula One, Liberty Media, took over a few months ago, took over the company that owns MotoGP. And, of course, they want a street circuit, because a street circuit gets more people there, more sponsors, and you can make more money. And they went to the Victorian government and said, you want to do it at St Kilda? Two reasons not to do it there. One is too much noise already, so the fine burgers of that area would kick up a huge stink. And secondly, you need to have corners, when you turn them, have a big runoff, because the riders actually, when they come off the bike, as you've probably seen, slip along the surface. So you don't want to run into a wall at 100 something kilometres an hour skidding on your bum. Adelaide, of course, have got the original, or one of the original Australian F1 circuits there through the parkland. So they, of course, said, yeah, you can do whatever you want to do here, have it here. So Adelaide, as you know, needs all the help it can get. It's the city that always sleeps. So good to see them having a bit of fun.
No, but that's Chicago, isn't it? Chicago's the city that always sleeps.
I mean, it's good to see them. Quite frankly, there's more motorheads and better cars in Adelaide than anywhere else in Australia. So good on them for getting the bikes as well. And Macca, you probably wouldn't remember, but for a long time, up till probably the 70s, motorbikes were a major form of transport in Australia. Working people couldn't afford cars, but they could afford bikes, and there are as many bikes on the road, motorbikes, as there were cars. So anyway, they're a great part of Australiana.
John, great to talk to you. Can I ask you what you drive? Do you drive an... You don't drive an EV, do you?
Well, I drive something like an EV. It's a Holden SSV V8U. It has got a battery.
John Connolly, great to talk to you.
See you, Macca. Bye.
One of our listeners sent me a video the other day, yesterday actually, of the hay run that happened on Australia Day. We weren't here on Australia Day, but they just sent it to me and I'd not been aware of it. It was the need for feed, and there was feed going everywhere, but basically going from to the Longford fires in Victoria, I think, around Alexandria. But I thought I'd talk to Graham Cockrell from Need to Feed. He's on the line. Good morning, Graham.
How are you, Macca?
I'm all right, mate. I'm back in the chair and loving it, I think. tell me about that. Seemed a lot of feed. Where did all that come from?
Absolutely all donated, Macca.
Yeah.
There's some fantastic stories amongst that too. We had this time last year we were doing bushfires in the Grampians in the west of Victoria, and the load that was on my truck and some of the other loads were from farmers who were burnt out just 12 months ago. And then there were other loads from farmers from the southwest of Victoria where we'd been doing drought relief just as recently as July last year, and also from communities in South Australia where we'd been we've been working on and off in South Australia over the last 2 or 3 years for the drought over there. And things have turned around. I think a lot of southern Victoria and South Australia have been very fortunate to have a really good end of spring, and there's been a fair bit of hay out there.
And that's it's uplifting, isn't it, when you see something like that, uplifting for all of us. And it happens regularly, as you know, and routinely, that people in need. I always remember the time when droughts would happen and people would have to shoot their, that's 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, people would shoot their cattle. But now it seems the trucks come to the rescue and the donated fodder goes everywhere after droughts and floods and fires, and they're always needed. So it's a changed time, and it's one of the wonderful things, I think, about people in need these days.
Yeah, look, people still have to destock in droughts, and they should. It's a natural occurrence in Australia. But, with fire, and in particular the Longwood one, Longwood, not Longford, different place in Victoria. That was supposed to have started from a spark from a fairly minor incident or an accident with a truck on the Hume Highway, and might have, I'm not 100% sure, but may have clashed with the road barriers, and one spark and off she went. And that particular fire, I think there's probably been, 7 or 8 significant fires with loss of property across Victoria, over January and into February a bit. But that fire there is by maybe not the biggest, because there's been others that were in state parks and pine plantations and things like that. But certainly I think the figures are something like about 550 houses gone across Victoria with these series of fires, but 320 of them are in that Longwood fire.
Yeah, a bloke just rang me a little while ago and said they should clean up the road verges, because that's one of the reasons why we had the fire. That's what he said anyway. Do they clean up the roadside verges and that sort of thing?
There's a bit of slashing goes along where they can get to it on the freeways and that, and I think councils on the roadsides, but there's a lot of that they're pretty hard to get into because they've got these barriers that go all the way from Albury, just about to Melbourne.
Yeah, so you're on the go all the time. Because I know I've got a note here from Kevin Butler about all of hundreds of farmers who are in dire straits who want to get their fences back up as their cows are running everywhere and all that sort of stuff. So it's a pretty full on. Are you still delivering hay and things like that?
Yeah, we have been. We've had trucks on the road every week, almost daily, since the fires started back on the 7th or 8th of January. And we've got another hay run. It won't be as big as that one. The Australia Day one, we had 76 trucks and about 20 utes and trailers, or cars and trailers, four drives and trailers. They were carrying the smaller bales and bags of dog food and things like that. But I don't think we'll get that many for this one. But hopeful, still about 40 trucks. Hopefully,
that's
of requests. So that's on 2 weeks' time. So Sunday the 8th of March, which is a long weekend in Victoria and I think South Australia and Tassie. We've got another hay run happening then.
All right. Well, good on you, Graham. Keep up the good work, mate. I'll bump into you sometime. I always love to be where the hay turns up when all the trucks are there and they're parked. It's almost like Christmas, isn't it?
That's a long time since we caught up with you.
I know.
It was St. Patrick's Day fires 2018.
Really?
Yeah.
So where will you be on the long weekend?
We will be back up at that fire area. Mm-hmm. This time we're going in through the top end. Mm-hmm. Last time we ended up at Alexandra. This time we'll end up at Ruffy, but we'll be having lunch at Euroa. If the listeners would like to support, I know there's a lot of worthwhile causes out there, but this one in particular. Need for Feed is a registered charity. It's also a national project of Lions Australia, and we are all volunteers, so even at admin level. So, if people want to support what we're doing or even donate some hay or volunteer their time, needforfeed.org is the website, and you can see on there where to do all of that.
All right, Graham, good on you, mate. I'll see how I'm going, but I'll try to catch up, mate.
You really should. It's a good thing to be involved in. Can I just quickly tell you something else that really stuck in my mind about that hay run?
Mm.
And besides all the donated feed from people who'd been helped out before, the closer we got to the fires, and look, there were people out cheering as we came through Melbourne, all the way up the Hume Highway in bits and pieces. The police took us in through Seymour, and then through Yay. But once we got into the actual fire area, something that really stood out was the amount of people who were obviously victims themselves had come out their driveways or come out the end of their road to cheer the boys on and show their appreciation.
And I saw it a little bit in the video, some little kids and one kids had signs flags, and an Aussie flag Australia.
kids holding up thank you signs and things like that. It was just fantastic. Yeah.
It's the Aussie spirit, which should never be forgotten. Good on you, Graham. Yeah. I'll try and see you at a Euroa or somewhere. No pressure. But
the pressure's on you.
That's what I mean. Yeah. All right, mate. Good on you.
Okay, thanks, Macca.
See you. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. This is Beth White from Ben Lomond, New South Wales.
Hi, Beth.
Just to hear you talking about all the peaches, and we've just had the most fantastic, first it was figs, then peaches, then plums, then some nectarines, and now we're waiting for the pears, and then it'll be apples. So it's just been a busy, busy time trying to make use of all this produce. We've only got a little farm orchard that's just a tree of this and a tree of that, and it's just been beautiful. Yeah, we've celebrated that locally in our little village of Ben Lomond. We celebrated produce and preserving it and making sure we don't create waste and that we share it amongst each other. And every pickle, relish, chutney that you can think of, and a few creative sauces that you'd never dream would go together, They all happen and they're great.
And but this is the best time really for nectarines and peas. Seems to me,
absolutely,
isn't it? Like the just towards autumn, and if you let things ripen on the, they just taste ripper, don't they?
Oh,
beautiful.
Well, there's no substitute for something ripened on the tree. And Macca, probably the main purpose for my call is to say that on the 15th of March this year, the Presbyterian Church in Gyra, the St. Columba's Presbyterian Church, will celebrate 100 years since the foundation stone was laid. And we're just going to have a church service starting at 9 o'clock in Gyra at the church, and followed by a morning tea. And anyone who's got any connection or any interest is more than welcome to attend.
There you go. I think my granny used to be a Presbyterian. I'm pretty sure. Tell me this, are more people going to church now, do you think? I mean, it's only an anecdotal thing, but do you think people are, I don't know, embracing it a bit more? Or?
Well, there are people who embrace it. I think we're an older set. We don't have a lot of young people in our group, but we meet weekly. We have a fellowship group, and we support each other in many other aspects of life. I'm guessing that's how it works.
Yeah, the other thing was a bloke rang earlier this morning. I tried to get back to him, but he wasn't there. But he said, because we were talking about, I was talking about my sister was scammed the other day, and so she didn't have the card, and she had to get in touch with the thing, and I said, we'll send you a card. And she said, but I've got to go and pick up my car, which has been repaired, and they won't take cash. So, and then this bloke said, well, look, you know, cash and cards, Macca, but we're involved in bartering. And I was thinking of you with all your chutneys and fruit and stuff like that. But you've got to have it. You know, there's nothing I can barter. I don't have a backyard full of pumpkins or, you know, 20 kilos of tomatoes or something like that. But when you look around and you see, you know, people not taking cash, I mean, I think it's a low time for a lot of Australians, a lot of older Australians especially.
And those of us who've got produce, like we can't see it go to waste. We share it around. We do stuff with it, we cook with it, we do everything we can with it to extend, we call it extending the harvest. So the harvest lasts for, you know, you've got to get it when it's ripe, especially when you ripen it on the tree or in the on the vine. And to extend the harvest, you make all of these pickles and chutneys and things, but you also share it around in your community. I've got as much as I want in my freezer or in my preserving bottles. Can you use some? Take it to church, share it around. We often have a bag full of stuff just put on the table at the morning tea.
I'm coming. What's the name of your Presbyterian church?
St. Columba's Presbyterian Church in Gyra.
I'm coming.
on the 15th of March, 9 a.m, and then we're having morning tea. Everyone's welcome.
All right. Good on you. Nice to talk to you, Beth.
Thank you. Thanks, Macca.
See ya. Bye. Lizzie's in East Gippsland. Morning, Liz.
Good morning, Macca. Nice morning here.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about Captain John King Davis. He was one of the explorers. I can hardly hear you for the birds.
They're not at your place, are they? No.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of birds here. Yeah, we were kookaburraing at the same time as you were.
All right. Anyway, yeah, go on.
Yeah, okay. He was one of the explorers of the heroic age in Antarctica. He captained the ships for both Mawson and Shackleton.
Mm.
And some woman read his book called High Latitudes, and she went to try and find his grave, which was an unmarked grave, somewhere in Melbourne Cemetery.
Uh-huh.
So she eventually found it. The Anari Club, which is the people who've been to Antarctica Club, put together, and we got permission from his family in South Africa and some of them here in Victoria that we found in the end, and made an actual gravestone for him there. So he was reinterred with his brother, who was 4 years old. It was his elder brother, with his elder brother in the same plot. So he was reinterred by the chaplain from Cerberus, and great ceremony.
And when was this?
Thursday.
Last Thursday. And his name, his name again is
Captain John King Davis.
John
Davis Station in Antarctica is named after him.
There you go.
And my husband was at Davis.
Wasn't it good? There you go. It was good that that lady went searching.
Oh, was it ever?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So we're all extraordinarily grateful, you know, to her for what she's done for us.
Exactly. Little things. It's like I can't even remember her name, but there was a lady who went around recording some famous people, and she recorded Dorothea McKellar reciting her poem. And without her pottering around, and that happened, you know, many years ago, but she had a little tape recorder, probably in the 50s or 60s, I'm not sure.
Yes.
And without that, you wouldn't have it. And it's the same with this lady who's, took it upon herself to right her wrong, really, in lots of ways.
Oh, rightly, as far as the Inari Club's concerned.
Yeah, I'll say. You're in the Inari Club?
Yes, I'm in the Inari.
You're an Antarctician?
Antarctician, as well as.
How many times have you been down
there? I've only been down once.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, yeah, afterwards we had a service at the chapel of the Mission for Seamen, which is well and truly worth seeing if you've never seen it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's in the city and it's Spanish Revival or something. Great big dome and all sorts of stuff. And there was a plaque for Nella Dan, one of the famous Antarctic ships, that has now been set in the park behind the Mission for Seamen. So we saw that as well. So it was great.
Well, good on you, and thanks for letting us know, Liz. John King Davis.
Yes, Captain John King Davis.
All right.
And if you do a Google search and go down to the references from Inari, A-N-A-R-E, you'll find everything about Davis.
All right.
And what we did.
All right. I'll do that, Liz. Thanks for letting us know. It's a little part of our history. It's wonderful.
Yes, and we should really be treasuring that history. Uh-huh. We have such a rich history and we just don't seem to acknowledge it.
No, it's like the bloke who rang this morning. Was it Jared talking about Edward John Eyre? And I'm sure we don't learn that history. And here's the bloke who took a cross and then he meets up with the French whaler and he would have been cactus without that. But they're important. Just so we seem to have forgotten one part of Australian history, which is not sort of kosher in some ways. We don't seem to talk about it. But anyway, maybe things are changing, Liz. Hopefully. All right. Good on you.
Okay. Thanks, Macca.
John King Davis.
Davis.
Good on you.
Captain John King Davis.
Captain. I forgot the captain. Good on you.
Okay. Thank you.
See ya.
Bye. Bye.
Barb is in Canberra. Morning, Barb.
Oh, good morning, Macca. I'm in Canberra. Lee just said to mention that I'm up here playing Masters hockey with my daughters, which is very nice. And we've had two extremely hot days, but this morning it's clouding over and I think rain is on the way for Canberra. And we won all our games and we're playing in the final this afternoon.
I played a bit of hockey. I liked it. But we played on grass, but you're all on synthetic now?
Oh, well, actually, from Bega, we have grass fields, but we're playing against women who have grown up playing on turf. And so it's been pretty amazing to have a grass team beat a lot of the others. So we've only got one more win to go, one game and hopefully a win. But I'm actually ringing about our Bega show. Our 150th Bega show, which is on next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been waiting a couple of years to run this because our showground has been undergoing a major construction works for the Bega Valley Evacuation Centre.
Right.
After all the bushfires that we had. So everybody's really excited to have this, celebrate 150th.
Oh, good on you. Is that a three-day show or a two-day, one-day, what?
We have a three-day show. We have all, like, our pavilion judging on the Friday with all the horses. And we've got the New South Wales Governor, Her Excellency Margaret Beasley, coming to open our show on the Friday night. So that'll be a bit of a highlight for the locals. And, and all the entertainment that we usually have, like the fireworks, the smash-up derby and yeah, anyway. So a lot of preparation has gone into this one, and we're just hoping it's going to come off really well for us.
Yeah, well, as long as it doesn't pour raining, it'll be fine, I reckon.
Yeah, well, I think we do need rain, of course, but there's a little bit of rain, I think, midweek, but hopefully the weekend should be good for us. Yeah.
Oh, I love the show. It's like the lady I just spoke to before, Beth in Ben Lomond, without all her trees and fruit trees and stuff, and she had the fowlers for cola and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
You see all that at every show, don't you? It's lovely. It's just it's very uplifting to see produce, because the older I get, I realise the world comes down to the really absolutely ordinary. It's the ordinary things.
Exactly, and I think actually the younger generation are actually getting back into that. You know, they're seeing the value of, you know, producing your own food, and it's not just the old timers, but they're there to lend all their wisdom and advice to those that come in, because every year people say, oh, this is my first year exhibiting, and a lot of them are now into the fermenting and preserving, and it's great to see, yeah.
And it's the cost. If I had the time, it's the cost of potatoes and lettuce and stuff, things we all used to have, and rhubarb and spinach and carrots, all the things we had in the backyard. Now they're $6.50 a kilo for, God help me, everything. And $8 for a kilo for nectarines. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And we're also hosting the New South Wales and ACT State Dahlia Championships. So that's going to be an amazing display of dahlias. It'll just be like a room, our pavilion. We've got this historic pavilion, and it'll just be full of colour, and I can't wait to see it all. Yeah.
And dahlia rhymes with Australia, Barb. Can't be any better. Good on you. The Bega Show next week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, so if you're holidaying on the far south coast, come to the show next Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
I'll try and come. I will. I'll try and come. Good on you.
Thanks for your time, Macca. Thank
it's
you.
Pleasure. Bye.
We found this lovely house just a little way from town.
We bought a beachside unit.
We're travelling right around on the Wallaby.
It's our home among the gum trees, and if you've got the time, I'll tell you why I live where I live.
I don't know, maybe.
I'll tell you why I live where I live.
You're stuck where you are, aren't you? And I'm usually stuck where I am. I mean, you can get away, you can take a van away or something like that and go away for 4 weeks or 4 months. But you always come back. You can go overseas, you can go to Spain, or you can go to Aspen, or you go to Japan, but you've got to come back. But some people don't. Last time we spoke was some years ago, says Magnus Eriksson. We were in Cooktown and we had a lovely chat. We've put many miles under our keel since then, and visiting many countries and anchoring in too many bays to remember. We're in Holland at the moment, on our way to spend a summer in Finland. Our home takes us all over the world, and I wrote a little something to try and explain why we live where we live. We live where the water wiggles, where the tide hums low and the sunrise giggles, where our front door floats and our backyard drifts, and the whole wide world is our morning commute. Except there's no traffic, no petrol station, and occasionally no land. Our home's got no postcode, just a hull, a dream, and a slightly concerning creek that the surveyor definitely didn't mention. We've got a captain who's occasionally brave, occasionally Googling, is that smoke normal? And frequently wondering if the duct tape counts as marine-grade engineering. Some days our neighbours are legends. Sunburnt philosophers with spare limes, better stories, and an uncanny ability to fix anything with WD-40 and optimism. The sort who shout, come over for sundowners, before remembering we're all actually already over, bobbing in a communal soup of salt and camaraderie. Other days our neighbours are, well, let's call them opportunities for personal growth. The sort who run their generator at 3 a.m. because apparently silence is overrated. There's a chap with the karaoke system who believes the entire anchorage needs to hear the passionate rendition of Wonderwall at sunset. But that's the beauty of this floating life. If the circus gets too loud, if the drama reaches soap opera levels, if someone starts a sentence with, actually, according to my charts, We simply smile, wave like we're in a period drama, weigh anchor, and with the grace of a swan, or a drunk swan depending on the current, we glide off like polite escape artists towards the next bay of bliss, where the only sound is the gentle lapping of water and our own relieved laughter. Every day's a remix out here, a greatest hits album where every track is new. One morning we're sipping coffee with dolphins who've clearly got better things to do but humorous anyway. The next we're in a territorial dispute with a pelican who's convinced our deck is his personal runway, our dinghy his throne, and our dignity his plaything. Storms roll in like uninvited drummers with a grudge and no sense of rhythm. Sunsets arrive like slow standing ovations, the universe showing off, frankly, and time stretches so far you could hang your laundry on it, which is convenient because we're always doing laundry, in a bucket, with our feet, like some sort of maritime peasant. A year of this life feels like a decade. Not because it's hard, though explaining our lifestyle to insurance companies comes close, but because it's full of new faces, new places, new discoveries, I didn't know that could leak, new moments, oops, that wasn't supposed to catch fire, and new sighs. I genuinely can't believe this is my life. That sounds suspiciously like contentment. Routine can't find us. We've changed our address too many times. Boredom can't catch us. We've got a head start and a following wind. And the scenery never stays long enough to get dusty, stale, or turned into a screensaver. We stop noticing. Out here, Monday looks like Thursday. Thursday tastes like Saturday, and Saturday is just that day we saw the turtle. Our calendar is measured in tides, not meetings. Our commute is measured in nautical miles, not misery. And our office view changes more often than most people change their desktop wallpaper. This is why we live where we live, because the world is too ridiculously beautiful to choose just one view and call it quits, because neighbours are optional, because mystery tastes better than certainty and has fewer calories, because adventure is the best antidote to existential dread, and because the sea keeps whispering, "Go on, there's more. More bays, more sunsets, more stories. More reasons to question your life choices at 2 a.m. in a storm and then forgive them all by sunrise." So we go, and the song of the sea goes with us, a rhythm of rope and wave and wandering, a chorus of change that never gets old, a symphony of salt and possibility, a life that drifts but never drifts away, a home that moves but never feels lost, an existence that floats on hope, humour, and the occasional perfectly timed tide. We live where the water wiggles, and honestly, we wouldn't have it any other way. Even when the pelican returns. Especially when the pelican returns. Hope that all makes sense. Well, we love it. Warmest regards, Magnus and Wendy. On the sailing vessel, Nutshell. If that doesn't make you weigh anchor, nothing will. You can write to Why I Live Where I Live. Post Office Box 9994, Sydney 2001, and that's why I live where I live for this week. G'day, this is Macca.
Hello, Ian.
G'day.
It's Jen.
Hi, yep. Jen. Yes, Jen.
I'm in Ballarat, in Wanderree, and I was listening when you said about your guitar and new strings. I've recently, this isn't why I rang, but I've just recently had my piano, and the dear old thing's about 100 years old. I'm not that old, fortunately, yet. And the chap that does the tuning is good. And I had to ring him back and I said, "I think I've got a troublesome note." And I told him it was middle C. And he said, "You've got a feral note." So he's going to come back to fix it because she's temperamental, this poor old soul. He said she's an elderly lady. And he keeps it. He'd love to say, "Get a new one," but no, I'm attached to it.
Yeah, exactly. When we used to play, our piano player that we had when in the Joy Boys, he used to take his own tuning little hammer with him. So if the piano was out of tune, or if
the
he
weather,
if
he has an effect.
If he broke a string when he was playing, because he used to hit the piano, he
pretty
used
hard.
To hit the keys, and all of a sudden goes sproing. And he also, as well as having his tuning key, he'd have some spare strings. So he'd put a new string and then he'd be tuning it up. And anyway,
it's a fascinating instrument, wonderful instrument, the piano.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
A lot of joy.
Yes, I'll say. And now, go on.
Macca, you were mentioning about doing concerts. Mm. I've actually attended with some relatives of mine, would it be 10 years ago, a concert at the Wenderee Centre here for performing arts.
Oh, yeah, we did, Well,
it was good.
It was, that's good. I'm glad
you... No, I've got one of your CDs, and you are truly amazing, and your show.
Thank you.
And I've listened since 1983.
Really?
Were you going there?
That'd be, I was. I just started then.
Oh,
I just
started. Don't retire. I'll be like the farmers.
We played at Wenderee because we were going to play at in town at Ballarat at the...
Her Majesty's. Yeah, that's all been done up.
Oh, has it?
Beautiful.
Yeah, lovely. But I think... Who was on at the same time when we played Wenderee, Kel? It was
clashed.
That bloke who was dancing and singing, Todd McHenry, that's right. He was.
Oh, yes.
So we tried to book it.
He took precedence.
Well, he'd booked it. So
we
couldn't get in. So we went to Wenderee, but it was good. Yeah, it was lovely.
It's handy for me. I can just walk around, and I'm going to do it this afternoon to see David Hobson, Marina Pryor, Sylvie Palladino, and Michael Cormick.
Wow.
I reckon it'll be good.
There's a quadrilla.
Yes.
And how's things around your way, Wenderee?
Not bad, except it's misty today and I've been walking in the rain. There's something about that, walking in the rain. It's overcast and humid and it's 20 degrees in Ballarat.
Uh-huh.
And Lake Wenderee looks lovely and it'll soon be the Begonia Festival on the coming long weekend.
And what do you do with yourself when you walk around Wenderee?
Pick up rubbish. That's why I'm really rank. I like my walk down to my local shopping strip to get the papers. I love reading the newspapers. And I haven't got a computer. And I go down to get Sunday's Age, which is very good. Well, it got so bad recently. I've been here for quite a while. The rubbish along the street. It's a main thoroughfare. It's opposite, the street is opposite the Ballarat Grammar School. And so it's busy, and the main other street is Howard Street. And look, the rubbish got to me a couple or 3 weeks ago, and I picked up about three big bags. It filled up my bin. And then now, so my Sunday chore, and another lady I met a couple of days ago, and we said, hello, as you do in the street as you go past. Oh, she said, you're picking up rubbish. And I said, oh, yes, it's there. Oh, she said, I do that too. So her name was Jan, and I'm Jen. We said, well, we're the rubbish pickers.
You should be Australian of the Year. That's what should happen. Jen, you should be Australian of the Year, not some of the people who...
Oh, I don't think so, Macca. I'd be too scared.
No, well, you don't have to be scared.
I must have got... I don't know, thrown caution to the wind when I thought, I'm going to ring Macca today. And I did, when you gave the number out. And I've got an eclectic mix of rubbish. I've got all sorts of things, a car exhaust.
Well, don't start collecting rubbish. There's places around the olive and the front yard is full of crap,
Oh, McDonald's, papers, Mentos. A lot of people must have Mentos. I get the end of the packet. I'm doing micro rubbish pickup, micro plastics, bits of wire, car exhaust.
Australia does rubbish. Although our friend Jono, he said, I don't know what's wrong with in Egypt. He'd just come back from Egypt, and Jono's passed away. And he said, you know, this is the mob that built 5,000 years ago, built the pyramids and stuff. He said, but they can't clean up. There's stuff and rubbish
tragic
all over the place. So I don't know.
I talked to the councillors. They were very good. And they're going to install two rubbish bins near our post office optometrist.
But it goes beyond rubbish bins, doesn't it?
People don't use them. Some might.
Who was the wonderful author, English, I think, who said we're not going to die with an atom bomb. We're going to disappear in a sea of crap.
Plastic pollution. Imagine what's under the sea where those people are enjoying their life on their boat. I hate to think it's in the deepest crevice in the sea. Right?
Oh, but it's everything. It's not just plastic. It's tyres, you name it. We throw
it
out.
Yes.
We buy a lounge suite and then we buy a new one and it's all out in the...
Oh, and it's too sad.
Oh, Jen, keep up the good work,
aren't we? I think the good times are gone, Megan.
The good times are.
But Look, I've met a lot of good people too.
Yes,
so
you do.
I had a fellow when you cleaner upper, so that was encouraging.
You're Australian of the Year, Jen. Good on you.
No, no, I'm not.
Got
to
fly.
I think that can go to you, Macca, in space.
Yeah.
And the people that ring in, they're truly amazing, and so are you.
Good on you.
Ring in there.
See ya.
Good luck.
See
good
ya.
Health.
Bye. Bye-bye. Wasn't she nice? G'day, this is Macca.
Hello, Macca. It's Calvin. I'm from Northwest Victoria.
Hi, Calvin.
I have met up with you at a Western District Blaze Aid camp you put on a show at Coblin many years ago. We had a bit of a chat.
All right, anyway, yep. Anyway.
First time caller, long time listener.
Where are you, Calvin?
I'm at presently on Kangaroo Island, Macca, and my home is at Northwest Victoria at Warwicknabeal.
Uh-huh. And what are you on holes, are you, or something?
Oh, maybe doing a small job there on the property.
A small job. Sounds interesting.
Small job, it goes on forever. Anyway, what I'm ringing about is that the major fires and floods we've had increasing every year, more and more damage. The homes are about there in central Victoria, numbered around over 300. Talking about the floods, I think it was something like, was it 180,000 or 200,000 cattle drowned in the recent floods in Queensland? I look at the cause of the problem. What's causing it all? And I feel it's the damage we've done to the soil with our farming, that it's created a hard pan, which is only about 5 centimetres below the surface, a very solid hard pan, and it's reflecting the sun off this hard pan back up in the atmosphere and causing more and more heat. And the floods are very similar. The rainfall doesn't soak in anymore. It's caused by chemicals, damage to the soil and the urea we're using, and it's caused this hard pan. And I think we've got to change things. And rather than the $11.1 billion that the government's providing for drought relief, it's the wrong way around. They should be providing some funding for finding the cause of the drought, and it's easily rectified by not using anywhere near the amount of chemicals we are and reinstating our soil to what it was originally.
Yeah, well, that was the former Governor-General's big thing, wasn't it, about soil and look after soil. You've got to look after everything. As I said earlier, you know, I live in the suburbs, always have, grew up in the suburbs, and when I was a young kid, the suburbs were leafy and bushy, but now they're being infilled with huge houses, and the whole block, every block in a suburb, is all house and pool and cement and pathways, no garden at all, and that's repeated after house after house. And when I grew up, my suburb was full of little blue wrens and silver eyes, but there's no habitat for them now, you know, no habitat at all. So that's just another way that we're just, you know, the environment, doing the environment a disservice and doing ourselves a disservice. But I don't know, the flood thing, why are we building on floodplains? And the drought thing, I don't know, and bushfire, we should be burning around near where we live, and then you won't be burning houses and things like that. It's one thing for a fire to happen in remote bushland, but if people are being burnt and houses are being burnt, there's something wrong somewhere, I think, Calvin.
What a waste, Macca, and it's also we've got that far away from nature, as you just stated, and the ruining of our soil is a major thing, probably worldwide, and it's just absolute disaster. Why should the government provide the funding after the event, floods and fires? They should be providing funding. And I went to a meeting just a while ago at Horsham on a drought meeting. I tried to bring up this point of doing something prior to the floods or prior to the fires. Nah, didn't want to listen, but anyway, that's the government for you. But something has to be done, otherwise what's going to happen next? Is Melbourne going to be burnt out? Is Sydney going to be burnt out? Then they might do something. But we need to find the cause of all this, Macca.
Calvin, you're on Kangaroo Island, and they had the big fires, what, a couple of years ago? Was it 2 or 3 years ago, was it, on Kangaroo Island?
Six years ago now, Macca.
God, yeah. Isn't it amazing? Six years ago.
I was over here when it happened, and the air was very, very hard to breathe because the lack of oxygen in the air, but then I went along and I helped out at the Blaze Aid camp. I've done 7 Blaze Aid camps over the years in various states. Good friends with Kevin Butler. It's a great service, but we don't need all these fires and floods. Do something about it, Macca, and just get the soil right. That's the main thing. If the soil can breathe, we'll be far, far better off.
Good on you, Calvin. Great to talk to you, mate.
All the best, Macca, and a lovely show.
Thank you very much. Good on you.
Bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, this is Gordon.
Hi, Gordon.
Yeah, we've been travelling on the Kidman Way, just stopped at the moment to keep phone reception to you, and overcast and raining lightly, and all the emus on the side of the road have been scaring us that we've got to make sure we don't run into them.
Well, slow down. That'll be the go. How many, lots of emus on the Kidman Way? Whereabouts?
Not lots, but two here, three there, two there. Yeah.
So you're near Hillston, are you?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it's not, I love to see the emus wandering about, you know. And as the song, that little song said, please don't put him on your plate. I didn't know they ate emus till I went to that little soiree thing. It wasn't a soiree, really. It was an outbacky thing. But there were, I think there was some emu, not burgers. I don't know, little skewers or something of emu. I don't know. Have you eaten it, Gordon?
Yes. Emu is a very good meat. So if you ever get an accidental roadkill, gather the thighs and take them home. Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard. And why is it a very good meat, Gordon?
It's a nice combination of flavour and fats, and tender. Yeah, what more could you want? Yeah.
What more indeed?
Yeah.
Go on.
Why I instigated this call was to inform you and your listeners that we've got three electric cars in our family.
Right.
And we love them. They are fantastic.
Yep.
We charge them with solar power from panels, we wouldn't have it any other way.
Well, I'm sure lots of people who've got electric cars feel exactly the same way as you do. I read a little last week from a bloke who said he hasn't paid for electricity for, I don't know, 5 or 10, 15 years because he's charged his house with his via his car and the solar thingos, and away you go.
Yeah, so the fellow that was on there was saying the risk of fires. American statistics show that it's only a 5% chance of catching on fire, electric car, compared to a petrol or diesel.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, that's right, 5%.
I wonder why we hear about battery fires all the time, but, you know, it's all sorts of battery fires too. Sometimes a bike will catch on fire. But, basically what he was saying is that there's been a lot of cars recalled of late because there was concerns about the electrical system in some way, so they've recalled, you know, I forget, Kias and all sorts of things, that's all. And he was talking about what do you do? You're at Hillston now. How do you charge your car?
Not an electric car this time.
No,
we're running on diesel today.
Yeah, well, he was talking about charging cars, and you know, if you're not living in the suburbs, it's can be problematic. Is that the word? Yeah.
We get with our electric car, we get 400 kilometres safely, and we find the best way to travel is to not empty the tank, empty the battery, and then fill it up, but to go for an hour or two.
Keep it topped up, eh?
Have a cup of tea, have a pee, and
And collect some emu thighs, drumsticks, and there'd be a bit of meat in an emu drumstick, wouldn't there, mate?
Yeah. How much meat?
It's about 5 kilos in one thigh.
Who's that in the background?
My wife.
What's her name?
Rosemary.
Hi, Rosemary.
Hello, Macca.
And do you like you like the emu drumsticks too? I wonder if McDonald's haven't got them. Yeah, anyway, or KFC.
No, no, no. Minced up emu meat makes fantastic hamburgers.
Yeah, I have to call it Kentucky Fried Emu. Well, I take your word for it. I won't be joining you anytime soon. As I said years ago, I think when I'm not going to touch anything on the coat of arms. But anyway, Rosie and Gordon, nice to talk to you. And, yeah, keep driving and take care. And don't clock any emus.
No, thank you.
All right, good on you, Gordon. Bye. Thank you. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, hello, Graham here, Macca. How are you going?
Yeah, good, Graham.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, you did a feature with me. I published a book called Arnhem's Kaleidoscope Children, which was about me growing up in the middle of Arnhem Land in the Northern Territory, surviving crocodile attack and stuff. Anyway, that's old history. But in the meantime, I've written another 10 books, and I've just opened a bookshop in Lithgow with the theme being where the city meets the outback, because all the roads lead through Lithgow if you're going out bush from Sydney. But the thing I wanted to tell you about today is a great event on in Lithgow this weekend. It's called the Seven Valleys Wild Food Festival. And I just thought you might be interested, as some of your listeners might be interested. So there was lots of stuff on yesterday, savouring all the different foods in market stalls. But the thing that's on today is a storytelling session from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the Union Theatre in the middle of town, where a whole lot of people are talking about how you gather wild foods, foraging for, you know, mushrooms, blackberries, lots of bush tucker.
And some roadkill too. You should have got Gordon along because he's...
Yeah, I was just listening. It's really interesting.
You think?
I've never minded bush tucker, and whether it's meat or other, it's all good to me because I grew up in an Aboriginal community in Arnhem Land, and goanna or crocodile or whatever, it was all part of the menu.
That's right. Crocodile. Nothing's off the menu, it seems to me. Although you wouldn't be eating koala or a platypus, but I mean, I assume that time gone by, people have done that.
Yeah, and one thing that was really interesting on this session yesterday was there was a lady who talked about all the wild foods you can harvest in the city. You know, we all think, as you were talking about on your show earlier, about losing all the bush in the city, which is true, but she has worked out all the things you can virtually feed yourself from the nature strips, overhanging branches, water in the city.
That's not a good look, Graham. So there's the old black again. He's out in the nature strip. You mean like nasturtiums and things, but people don't have gardens anymore, so you've got to rely on the nature strip, and everybody mows their nature strip. I don't know, you know, and then you find that there's mushrooms come up and you think, no, you better not eat that. They could be, you know, death cap mushrooms or something.
Yeah. Well, she was encouraging people to learn about what is edible, like so many things that people call weeds, which are quite edible. Mm. Plus, you know, and then just go out and pick them from bits of vacant land, not to be always mowing nature strips. Let the nature produce its bounty was really what she was saying.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's more and more I'm coming to the view that we should be, if we have a backyard or even a veranda, but it's a lot harder if you want to bring one of those boxes and fill it up with soil and start growing your own cabbages and stuff, but that's a bit of work. But in your backyard, same thing. But with the cost of vegetables and the fact that it's fresh and it's nice and you've grown it yourself, and you know, I can remember my mum's, she wasn't a great, you know, gardener. She wasn't in the garden all the time, but she grew some lovely sugar snap peas and bits and little cost lettuce and stuff like that. And they're just lovely. You bring them in and, yeah, there it is, and it's fresh and it's yours. And so, but it takes a lot of time, mate. That's the problem. If you're going to grow your stuff, you've really got to know your way around the weeds if you're out on the bush strip or in a park. And there's not many places in the suburbs you can do that. So I suppose you've got to hit the road, have you?
Well, I was a bit surprised. She was saying Marrickville and Green Square and those places were where she'd been investigating, and I would have thought that's pretty much built out central Sydney, but she said, oh, no, there's lots of stuff if you just know. I'm not saying go and do it if you don't know, but find out is her message. And
so that's on in Lithgow today, is it, this talk?
Yes, starts in the Union Theatre in a few minutes at 10 o'clock, runs through till 3 o'clock this afternoon, lots of talks, and really interesting.
Kel, do you know the Union Theatre? You're a Lithgow girl from way back. You know the Lithgow Union Theatre? Sounds like a good place, actually. What's that hold?
Oh, probably a couple hundred people. I was there yesterday. It was only half full, and there's probably 100 people there.
Yeah, well, you should, Gordon. Where's Gordon? And Gordon's out at Hillston, but maybe next time you do this, get Gordon come in and bring in a couple of them embalmed big emu drumsticks.
I'll suggest I can't believe next year's program.
Good on you.
Yeah. Thanks, Macca.
It's a pleasure, Graham. Bye. Pauline's in Maya.
Hello, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, Pauline.
Look, I just wanted to know, do you have a date when you are coming over to Harcourt?
Oh, no, I don't. But, look, it'll have to be in the next 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. Should I get in touch with you?
No. I'm an outsider, but would love to come and see you.
We're all outside. You're not an outsider here, Pauline.
Oh, thank you, Macca.
You're not an outsider.
No, I love you. Love your show, and we thought we'd like to come and see you.
Yeah, well, I'd love to see you too. Look, I'll keep in touch. Have we got, right. we got a number for Pauline Kell, have we, somewhere? Yeah, she's not talking to me. Yeah.
I've given the number, yes, I have, Macca.
Yeah, well, we'll get in touch with. I have thought about it because there's a lot of things I've got to do and things I've got to take care of. But I reckon in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I'll try and be there.
Well, we hope to see you then.
Yeah, that'd be good. And what's happening?
You take care.
Yeah, are you dry there or wet or what's the story?
Yeah, we're dry there, yes. My neighbour and I said, we'd go over there. You know, we didn't know whether you were going during the week or perhaps it might have been Sunday. We weren't too sure.
No, it'd probably be during the week, I reckon.
During the week, yes.
Look, we'll work on it. We haven't even thought it. We thought about it, but just put we'll put that on the list of things to do. But I'll let you know, Pauline, and I'll let people know.
I know you're a busy man. I realise that.
No, I'm not busy. I'm busy. Well, I'm sort of busy, but then I think it's just getting things done. You know, it's always harder, Pauline.
Of course it is.
Rushing to nowhere, as the song says.
Exactly right. Okay, then, Maggie, have a lovely day and take care.
Good on you, Pauline.
Great nice talking to you. Bye-bye, dog.
Yeah, you too. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at maccatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.